each of us can ask that question of ourselves. Why did we come tonight? And if anyone would like to share that response, I would like to hear it.
On peut répondre en français?
Si tu veux. Et je traduis.
Ok, je peux répondre en anglais.
C'est comme tu veux.
Je crois que je suis venu pour partager ce moment. Le vendredi, j'aime bien. J'aime bien le vendredi. Entendre l'enseignement. Ça m'a beaucoup apporté, et puis je sais pas, c'est un moment que j'aime bien partager. Mmh. J'aime bien partager ma méditation.
Et c'est quoi ta méditation? What is your meditation?
To be with people. To be here with you, right now.
Anyone else?
Moi, c'est la première fois que je viens, donc je suis venu ici pour découvrir ce que vous faites, et ce qui m'a attiré, c'est le rapport entre poésie, la poésie et la méditation.
Ok. Did you understand?
No, that's okay.
I'm happy to translate. It's the first time that he has come, and he wanted to discover this, what we do here, and he was interested in the link that I make between poetry and meditation. The question of poetry and meditation, I could expand and say art and meditation as well, and expand that to life and meditation, and expand that to just life, I would say. The moment of sitting, like we just did, is very concrete, practical activity, although we don't think of it as being that, but it is. We sit in a very precise posture, and we observe, or we are present with whatever arises. And then we stand up and go off into the world. And we are asked to have the reverse experience, meaning in meditation we are coming to space from a concrete point of position. And then we go into the world and we are encountering the concrete, and we are asked to come at it from a spacious point, meaning not to be stuck in one spot. It's like if you were on the train and you're seeing things go past, if you try to fix on one point, It's already passed. And then you miss everything else. That's the experience of everyday life. It's a fast movement, a multitude of activities, phenomena, people, things. And we are moving with it. Here, we're not moving. We just sit. I have a better chance of observing, of being present, because there isn't a lot of other distraction. That's why the posture is so important. It's kind of like a garden hose, and, you know, a tuyau. If it's bent, if it's twisted, the water will have difficulty coming through. It will just be a trickle. The same thing goes for our body. So we find a stable position that is the equivalent of the hose through which everything can flow smoothly. We give ourselves a base like this. This has 3 points. 3 points is always a wonderful base for everything. Same with our body. So we either sit on a chair, and then we're seated with our bottom on the chair and our two feet on the floor. Those are our 3 points. We're sitting cross-legged like this, two knees and the bottom on the cushion. At the moment, I have a problem with my knee, so I have to sit like this, two knees and the bottom on the cushion. Always these 3 points. And if those 3 points are stable, everything else goes without a problem. The back will be straight, the neck will be straight, the head will be straight, the shoulders will be straight. Not tight, not pushed back, not rigid, easy. Straight but easy. And then we have a better chance of being present with whatever arises. In the metro today, there were so many people. It was line one. It was packed. It was slow. There was a problem. There was wind. My hair was blowing in front of my face. I was crowded. I couldn't see anyone. I couldn't see apart from my hair blowing in front of my face and the other person's hair in my face. The rest of it was obscure. So I just was present to my hair blowing in front of my face and the person's face in front of me. Which is fine. There's nothing wrong with the fact that my hair was blowing in front of my face. But it's an indication of I can see more if my hair isn't blowing in front of my face. So when I came home, I put my hair back. That's the equivalent of sitting down in a stable posture. It's like tying your hair back so that it's not blowing in front of your face. Those of you who don't have as much hair, you don't know that problem, but you know you can recognize the problem in other aspects, in other ways in your life. Most of the time it's our thoughts that are like our hair in front of our face. Or it's wanting to get the hair out of my face. Or wanting the hair to stay in my face so I don't have to see anything else. I'm like this, then it's fine, I don't have to see anything. I can hide behind my hair. We do that a lot too. Or we blame the other people for pushing the hair in front of my face. And people were very edgy and angry in the metro this morning about their places and their positions and their frustration. But really, there is no We say the path is the goal. So this posture is not, we are not taking this posture so that we will arrive somewhere else. We are not, there is nowhere to go. We will not become someone else. We will not obtain some wonderful state, some title, some position. We will just be here, which is the only place to be. There's nowhere else to be but here. Sometimes I say that it's just a posture of yes, of just welcoming what arises. We can also say it's a posture of no, meaning no to what limits us, no to what blinds us, no to what deafens us. And generally, what blinds us and deafens us is our refusal to welcome what is. It's the putting the hair in front of our eyes so we don't see. So when you sat for this time, what happened? What happened when you sat?
I had many distracting thoughts, and probably actually my hair also. In front of me, and I tried to just get back to having a clear mind and just tried to let the thoughts pass like clouds and just get back to being clear.
And how did it work? Did it go okay?
Yeah, and sometimes it came back, and then I just had to do that again. I think I'm used to meditating for smaller amounts of time. Hmm. So I'm learning how to expand that. Hmm.
Yeah, it's a practice of coming back, moving away, coming back. It's a practice of movement, actually. We often think that meditation is a practice where we sit still and don't move physically. In fact, the physically not moving is secondary. The importance is to not move from the moment. And because the movement, the moment is always moving, it involves being in movement all the time. But it's a movement that involves not moving from the movement. Sounds confusing, but it's an experience that we can all probably recognize. It's kind of like if you're in a river, you know, wearing a boat, going down the river. If the boat catches on something, or if you grab something, then you stop moving. The river goes on, but you're here, and it's a struggle to maintain, to hold on, and stop the movement. It's the same thing with our presence here. We think it's a struggle to stay present. Like Melissa described, it's going off and then coming back, coming back, coming back. It's actually far easier to stay present than it is to wander off. That's not our experience. We don't realize it because it's such a habit to wander off. But actually, the peace is in the not wandering off. That's where it's just in the flow of it. I mean, that sounds like kind of a new agey thing in the flow, but I'm staying with the metaphor of the river. Right? It's much easier to just stay there in the boat and float down the river than it is to grab onto things and try to stay. But we do it. We do it. We wander off. And generally in this practice, I give as an introductory practice a counting practice where we, for each cycle of breath, so an inhale and an exhale is one. So every time we exhale, that's one. Exhale again, two, three, up until ten. And then we start over again. During the count, we generally tend to wander off and start thinking about something else, thinking about how stupid this is, or what we will have for dinner, or our first grade teacher's name, or the London subway, or Nicolas Sarkozy, and then DSK, and then the Sofitel. I walked by the Sofitel today, and on and on and on. And then, somewhere along the line, when we have had breakfast at the Sofitel, and then we remember a vacation we had in Rome, and then we think of Berlusconi, and then we're off with Madame Merkel, and then somehow we come back to, ah, yes, I was counting my breath. That's the key moment. Ah, I'm back. I'm absolutely present at that moment. Ah. Quickly, the ah becomes, I'm so stupid, I forgot. That was amazing what I was thinking of. What am I supposed to do now? Already we're off on another train. But that ah moment is the key. And when we come there, then we just say, okay, I start over. Start at zero again. I don't know where I was. I was at seven, I was at nine, I was at one. I don't know. I go back to zero. Start again. The whole thing happens again. But we've had that ah experience. And this time, maybe we have a little more awareness to the count, to the breath. Just this. That's all we have to do. Nothing else. It's a really basic task. And I give the same exercise to children when I teach them, to old people, to experienced practitioners, to new people, whatever. Everybody can do it. And it doesn't matter what the other thoughts are. It doesn't even matter if we're good at it or bad at it. There is no good or bad, in fact. It's just each breath. It doesn't matter how we breathe. All we are attempting is to be present to that breath, that one breath. And if we're not sitting in a stable position, or if we're lying down, or if if there's a lot of noise in the room, if people are coming and going, we become distracted more easily. We already have a lot of distractions going on in here without all the stuff going on out here. So it's best to try to give ourselves a situation in which we're sitting comfortably in a stable position and we've eliminated as many distractions as possible. And then when we go out into the world where there are a lot of distractions, we have perhaps a better chance of just being present. And as I'm saying this, I'm hearing all of these words, and I come back to the link between poetry and meditation. I don't know if there is a link, but the experience of the two for me is similar. And I would say that in both cases, the words don't say what we think they say. So what I'm saying to you about meditation doesn't really tell us what meditation is. It has to be experienced. And poetry does the same thing. It says what is not being said, the words in poetry. As with meditation. So I can tell you, this is a bottle of Evian. I can tell you where I bought it. I can tell you how much it cost. I can describe the feel of the bottle. I can drink it. I can describe to you what it tastes like to drink it. But that's not what it is. You have to drink it. The words will not do it. They may spark your curiosity. They might resonate. You might say, oh yes, that sounds like, I know what that's like. I've held a bottle of Evian before. I've tasted Evian before. I recognize it. This is not such a good example because everyone in this room has tasted water and is very familiar with that experience. The same thing is true of what I'm talking about in meditation. However, we're not so aware of it, but we've all had these experiences of being present just to whatever is right now, especially as children. However, as children, we may have tried to discuss it, but no adult was paying any attention. Or it didn't seem like a big deal. Children is just how the world is. A direct experience of things rather than a conceptual experience. But as we grow older, this is what happens to our mind. It becomes shaken. It's shaking all the time. It's moving all the time. There's a lot of things happening. And an example that we commonly give is if this was sandy water, dirty water, and we keep shaking it, it remains cloudy, the water. But if we put it down and let it settle in a stable place, the dirt will settle to the bottom and the water will be clear. Which is what, this is another metaphor for this. Usually we're out there and being shaken up by all sorts of things. When we sit down, it's a possibility for the mind to clear up. Now, there's nothing wrong with the dirty water. It's not negative. It's not something bad. And if we are present to the dirty water, it's clear. It's just dirty water. It's like I said, just hair in my face. Okay, I'm just present to hair in my face. It's neither good nor bad. How much time do we have?
It's 10 to 9.
So maybe we can try another sitting period now that we've had some words, too many words probably, and see what happens this time and try the counting maybe. See what happens. Any questions about that? No? Okay.